You're listening to the winning literary show, Off the Shelf Books Talk Radio, live with host Denise Turney, author of the books Long Walk Up, Portia, Love Pour Over Me, Spiral, Love Has Many Faces, and Rosetta's Great Hope. Turn up your dial and get ready for a blast of feature author interviews, 411 on book festivals, writing conferences, and so much more. Ready? Let's go.
In order to succeed, we must first believe that we can. And that quote is attributed to Nikos Kazantzakis. In order to succeed, we must first believe that we can. It all starts in the thought world. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Off the Shelf Books for this Saturday morning, March the 16th, 2024. March just started, didn't it? Go back to that quote. In order to succeed, we must first believe we can. It's time for waiting and putting things off. I'm telling you, don't play that trick with yourself. March just started. It's already March 16th. I feel like time is going like a blur. If you think you got time to do what it is you really want to do, you don't. So just get started. Just get started. And the next step will reveal itself as you complete the first step. That's nearly with anything, including walking or running. You just got to get started. So I'm encouraging you today to get started. To our loyal listeners who've been with us, we going 18 years, 18 years. Started over on a real radio station, Rainbow Soul out of New York City, and then came over to Blog Talk Radio. We are on so many platforms today, which I am so grateful for. I just want to thank our loyal listeners being with us for 18 years. If this is your first time coming over and you just were looking for something to do on this Saturday, March 16th morning, and you found this station, this podcast, I want to tell you, yes, you are listening to the Winning Book Podcast, Off the Shelf. And we have a wonderful, wonderful author on deck for you this morning. But before we get to that, I recently wrote a book, Thriving as a Single Mama Raising Happy Kids. And it's a book with tips, how to deal with school, the changes your child's going to experience as they age, children with special needs, places you can go to get help, and connect with other single mothers. That is a role that I sometimes think is the toughest role, to help shape a human life like that, solo, and where you can get support and help so you don't feel so alone. And, yes, you can raise phenomenal, phenomenal children as a single mother. Thriving as a Single Mom While Raising Happy Kids. It's in ebook, paperback, and hardback. You can get it at Amazon, Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, you name it, you can go there and get it. If you don't see it on the shelves, whether it's a library or bookstore, just ask the clerk. You want a copy of Thriving as a Single Mom While Raising Happy Kids by Denise Turney, and they can order a copy for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. Drum roll, drum roll, drum roll, and now let us go and meet today's special off-the-shelf guest. And our special guest this morning is Jessica Speer. Jessica is a highly acclaimed author of books for kids and teens, and her books are a blend of science, stories, and fun activities. Through her writings, Jessica unpacks tricky stuff that surfaces during childhood and adolescence. This children's and young adult book author has a master's degree in social sciences and explores topics in ways that connect with kids. Books she has authored include BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships, and Middle School Safety Goggles Advise. Her newest book is The Phone Book. I encourage you to check Jessica Speer out online at jessicaspear.com, J-E-S-S-I-C-A-R, now I'm getting the spelling confused, jessicaspear.com. I hope she corrects me if I didn't get that right. CASPEAR.com. We're honored to have Jessica Spear join us on Off the Shelf Books this morning. Let me bring her on live. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Jessica.
Thank you so much, Denise. It's so great to be here, and congratulations on 18 years. That is amazing.
Thank you so much. Did I get your website? Is it JessicaSpear.com? Is that correct?
The last name is Speer, so two E's.
Oh, so okay, you guys. Correction. Thanks for correcting me. JessicaSpear.com. EER.com. So welcome again, Jessica, to kick the show off today. I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask every guest who comes on Off the Shelf to give our listeners a little insight into the author before I start talking about your books. So to kick off today's show, Jessica, can you tell Off the Shelf listeners where you grew up and what life was like for you growing up?
I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and, you know, life was mixed, you know, like for a lot of kids. My family wasn't, you know, a really stable, happy home, so that was challenging for me. But then I also was a really academic kid and an active kid, so I did find a lot of success, you know, in school and activities there. So my childhood was a mix of, you know, positives and negatives. In fact, you know, I think that experience shaped a lot of what I'm writing about now.
Do you have siblings?
I have two older brothers.
Okay. Let me ask you about Arizona, because the people I've known that I've worked with, they love Arizona. They just love Arizona. They love the climate, everything. I always think, oh, my God, isn't it hot? They say, yeah, but it's a different type of heat. Do you just love that environment, the Arizona? People I know who've gone there said, oh, my God, I just love it.
Well, funny you should ask. I'm in Colorado now, and I liked growing up in Arizona. It was just fine. But what I found later in life that I really love is, you know, trees and mountains. So here I am in Colorado, and I also love four seasons. But my mother and one of my brothers is still in Arizona, and they really enjoy it. It's especially great for my mom, who doesn't want to deal with any snow or ice. And there's a ton of sunshine. So it really depends on what you're looking for. I love visiting her in the winter when it's really snowy and cold in Colorado. But I do love, personally, you know, maybe because I didn't have it as a kid, I love the distinct change of seasons. So I find that here in Colorado.
Okay. Now, when you were a little girl, what did you dream of being, and what did you want to be when you grew up?
No, oh, you know, I think like a lot of little kids, I dreamed of, you know, being an ice skater, even though I didn't even ice skate. Or I dreamed
interesting.
Of, you know, in Arizona, isn't that funny? I remember watching the Olympics and just being awed by what was happening. I didn't even ice skate, but, you know, just those far-reaching dreams as kids. I did dream of writing books too, and so that one I did make happen. So I had some really, you know, practical dreams and some that, you know, maybe weren't super practical.
Now, who or what inspired you to pursue writing? Where did your love for books, what was that birthed?
You know, I always have been a lover of books and a reader and a writer, and I didn't start off, you know, writing books for kids. I had a full career before that. But when my kids, I've got now two daughters who are teenagers, when they were little and I was doing a lot of reading with them, that really inspired me. So I started to dabble in it, and it took a long time to get my first book out. But, you know, I just kept working on the craft and figuring out, you know, what I really do want to write about. And then my first book just came out a few years ago.
Oh, congratulations. We're going to get into it. Now, I want to ask you before we start talking about your books, how old were you? You said you wanted your dreams ice skater, but you also knew you wanted to be a writer. But how old were you when you actually knew you wanted to be a writer and you actually sat down and started writing on a book?
Well, what's funny is I still have in my desk today a little, two little books that I wrote in elementary school that I, you know, back in the days, I typed them up. They were picture books, and I illustrated them and wrote myself a little bio, and, you know, still have them in my desk today. And what was amazing was the librarian at the school put them in the library. You know, even they were just on little sheets of copy paper. I know, they were just on copy paper, but she put them in the library, and I thought that was unbelievable. So that planted a seed. And then, you know, I grew up and went to college and studied something totally different and had a totally different life and got back to it in my, gosh, how I was in my 40s when I started writing, you know, professionally for kids.
You know, that's so interesting. So most of the guests who come on, even those who've written 10 or more books, the time between when they might have thought about writing or they love to read and they actually sat down and write was decades. Decades passed before many actually sat down to actually start writing a book. I have to ask you this. As I was researching for your interview, were you ever a school teacher?
I have college level, and I've done a lot of work with kids in school. So you know, indirectly, I've spent a lot of time in elementary and middle schools, and I've taught at the college level.
Okay. Now, can you tell us, because you write books for children and young adults, what attracted you to this particular, to writing for this particular audience?
You know what inspired me was my kids. I noticed when they were in elementary school that things started to get tricky in their lives. Their social lives were trickier. There was a lot more difficulties with friends that, you know, we were trying to help them learn how to navigate. And that really intrigued me because it reminded me of my experience when I was that age. And I realized, gosh, you know, when I was that age, I really could have used some more skills to navigate conflict in healthy ways, to stand up for myself, to, you know, to learn to have healthy friendships. So that actually grew into just being intrigued by that. I started a friendship program at the elementary school level for kids that were about age grade 3 to maybe 6th grade. And that I did that for years and learned so much from kids in that process and, you know, heard so many stories and similar stories that is actually what grew into my first book. And you mentioned the title, which is called BFF or NRF, which is Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships. And like all my books, it's really interactive, and because it grew out of a program. So it's got quizzes, you know, because kids that age tend to like, you know, interactive, fun, engaging books. So it's got some quizzes and activities and illustrations and fun fonts and colors. And it's, you know, since it grew out of a friendship program, it really guides kids on how to have healthy friendships in their lives. And they're starting young so they can start practicing some of these skills young.
Now, let me ask you, now, this book would also be for parents, and educators may also find a benefit in BFF or NFF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships. Do you think, now, when we were kids, my mom passed when I was very young, so my dad raised the five of us as a single parent, but he would always say this, kids are resilient, kids are resilient. And I've heard people say things like things just roll off a kid's back. It's adults that have a hard time letting go of things, holding grudges, and kids just play and have fun. But I don't know if that's really the case. Do you think parents and educators and people who don't work with kids a lot, and maybe even some grandparents, that they think that kids can really get through anything, name calling, you know, I was told sticks and stones can break your bones, or words can never hurt you. Just different things like that where, like, nothing's really affecting a kid. A parent frowns at a kid or constantly criticizes them, and you think it's not having any impact, and you don't notice it till they become an adult. Do you think people do assume kids are playing, they're laughing, having fun, that nothing ever bothers them?
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, some kids have deep wounds from, you know, stuff that happened, you know, maybe bullying or conflict with friends that they carry all the way to adulthood. And they also sometimes carry some really unhealthy relationship patterns. One thing I find, because so that first book is written for girls. I did a lot of work directly with girls, is girls not learning how to stand up for themselves and stop when they're stop the behavior when they're being treated really poorly. So in fact, I was just working with a group of girls last week. I now visit schools because schools do use the book, you know, to run groups and to help educate kids on some of these skills. And I was working with a group of girls, and what they do love to do is role play. So for some kids, it's not natural at all to really tell somebody, hey, I want you to stop, or hey, that's not okay for me. I'd like you to do this instead. That, you know, some kids don't have any modeling at home. So this is all new information to them, and it can be really empowering. So if they are in a situation where at school or in their community where somebody is treating them really poorly, just giving them the right words and the confidence that they can make that stop can be really powerful for our kids.
Yeah. So we know kids experience trauma and go through a lot of things, and a lot of times the symptoms don't show up to their adults. Similar to somebody in combat or dealing with trauma, it might not show up to the out of it years later as PTSD. But do you think parents raising young kids and other people dealing with young kids think that kids don't struggle, that they're playing, they're laughing? Do you think other people, not the kids don't have these experiences, but the other people observing them think they're just happy-go-lucky, they're not dealing with anything?
You know, it depends where you are. You know, so some places are really tuned into, you know, this is a whole, actually, it's been social emotional learning and development has been curriculum in preschools all the way up, you know, in across the United States for decades. So there is a responsibility to help schools learn how to manage their emotions in healthy ways, learn conflict resolution skills. So, you know, schools have been on top of this for a long time. You know, but it's a different story depending where you are and which family. So some families are completely hands-off and don't want to talk about it at all or know about it. But some communities are not at all like that at all. And some schools are really engaged, and parents actually do want to help their kids learn to develop these skills because we can get in some bad, unhealthy patterns. You know, if we don't learn how to speak up for ourselves, we don't learn how to actually really listen to somebody, if we don't learn how to cooperate or resolve conflict, that can really start to impede relationships in our lives.
Oh, you know what? Just listening to you talk, I'm so grateful that you wrote this book, BFF or NFF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships. These types of books are so important. Just like years ago, they started take our daughters to work day because they're like, daughters aren't getting this. They're not getting examples of this. Then people said, well, make it for boys too. Now let's take our kids to work day. But just the old way of raising families, I don't think it really works. You just did stuff, and nobody talked about things. Things happened. You didn't talk about it. I just thank you for writing this book. But when somebody's thinking about your book, are there, like, stories? You said there are activities, role-playing. Are there stories, like a little short piece, like this is a story between these two girls, it's a short story, and maybe what do you think about it? Or is it just really basically an activity book, Q&A, and the role-playing?
No, there's a lot of stories throughout. In fact, the stories are the stories I heard over and over. So those are the ones I really honed in on. And, you know, funny enough, one of the recent reviews I noticed on this book is somebody commented, oh, my gosh, Chapter 8 is exactly what my niece is going through right now. So I did try to select the stories that I heard over and over because they do happen often, and it resonates with the girls. And in fact, you know, one of the best parts I think for girls reading this book is it helps them know they're not alone. So if they're having a hard time, you know, or they're not fitting in, or they're not finding the right fit in friendship, or they're not being treated well, you know, just by knowing that there's a bunch of other girls that are stories are in this book, that that's their experience too, that's so validating for them to know that, okay, this is something that happens, and this is something that I can work through and make some changes on. So that's one of the, you know, the most powerful pieces of the book. In fact, you mentioned boys, and I'm actually working on another one now that is,
okay,
you know, for all genders. Yeah, because I started with girls because I had more participation there in the program, but, you know, I don't want to ignore boys, and boys have a whole different set of things going on with them, so I'm working on another book in for that genre too.
Awesome. So do you touch on social media and how kids, I see commercials on, and I think, I don't know if it's makeup companies that I've seen doing these commercials where little girls are really hard on themselves now when they look at these other models and young people on social media that look perfect. They don't know they got who knows how much makeup on, but do you touch on social media and that impact on girls as well in the book?
I do in all my books. So I touch on it in my first book, my second book, which is about middle school, I go deeper. And then my third book, which is called The Phone Book, goes very deep into social media because that book is really based on, you know, kids having connected devices really young. So helping kids stay safe and healthy online. But what you're saying is true. There's a lot of images out there that girls are seeing every day that are completely unrealistic. So, and it's hard as a young person and even as an adult not to compare yourself to those images. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are seeing, you know, a lot of girls struggling with eating disorders or disordered eating and, you know, just self-image problems. And I could see how this easily happens if they're seeing image after image. And these images are often filtered, you know, and changed. They're not even real images. But it's a tough time for girls to be growing up, you know, so publicly in the world.
Yes, and so thank you again for your book. What age group is the book? Is the book for?
The first book, the age group is about 8 first.
Okay.
Book.
Okay. Now, what 3 things, Jessica, has your research found in your experience? You have 2 teenage daughters. What 3 things has your research found to be most difficult for girls when it comes to making friends?
This day and age, it's harder for girls to make friends because of actually social media and connectivity. And so what is happening in many places is kids are so often staring at their phones, and some schools actually allow phones in schools, making it harder for kids to actually meet each other. So just as an example, you know, if there's a school that allows phones and kids are actually walking down the halls looking at their phones, or sitting down at their desk and they're looking at their phones, you know, and the teacher might have them put it away when they start schoolwork. But there's no time sitting there awkwardly for them to actually strike up a conversation sometimes. And then this, again, differs from one school to another. So it is a harder for kids to meet each other. You know, in some ways they're much more connected, but it's harder to get connected at a deeper level, I think, for kids. So that's one thing that my research showed me. Another thing that is really interesting is, you know, friendships change a lot. So especially during, you know, the preteen and the teen years when kids are starting to really, you know, figure out who they are and what they like and what they care about. And so friendships tend to change a lot during those years, which, you know, can be tricky on kids and also families. The family might wonder, why are you no longer hanging out with this person? You know, and there could be all sorts of reasons there. But it's not uncommon for friendships to go through a lot of transitions and changes during, you know, that preteen and early teen area, which is, you know, something that I try to make sure I point out in the book. And, you know, one of the friendship truths in the book is that friendships have different phases and change over time. You know, just acknowledging that that's true and it happens. Sometimes it's uncomfortable when we lose a friend that we really care about, but it's not uncommon. Friendships do have different phases and change over time.
Okay. And was there a third thing that you wanted to share that came you found difficult or most difficult for girls when it comes to making friends?
Yeah, you know, and one thing that kids are struggling a lot with right now, I think this is the state of the world. You know, there's a lot of strife and conflict in the world, and so there's a lot of kids struggling with depression and anxiety right now. I mean, in fact, it's at really high levels, you know, right now, higher than normal by far, and there's a lot of things contributing to that. It's not just phones and social media. It's having to do with, you know, strife in the world and family struggles, and so there's a lot that goes into that. But that also impacts our friendships. So it's harder when we are not feeling our best. That ripples into our friendships too. So that can certainly help, you know, make it kids have a harder time really connecting if they're not feeling so great in their lives too. So a lot, the good news on that though is a lot of schools are really pulling in a lot of support, more support for kids. A lot of schools are pulling in more counselors and guidance for kids just to make sure that we're not ignoring this. If there's a lot of kids out there that aren't feeling great today, let's do what we can to help support them and get them on a better path.
Awesome. I was going to ask you, how can girls and even boys dealing with this, how can they meet and overcome these challenges? I know you said schools are working with it. Are anything parents or caregivers, grandparents, it wouldn't be for the kids that age, after school, people work at after school programs, anything they can do to help young boys and girls meet and overcome these challenges?
Oh, that's a great question. And so, for a lot of kids, all it takes is one adult in their life that is really, really cares about them and is what I call a safe space for them to go to. And what I mean by that is this young person can go to that adult and really share what's going on without judgment. This person's really going to hear them, is really going to help them navigate some really tough emotions they might be having. Sometimes as adults, it's our instinct just to try to cheer them up right away or try to fix the situation. But often, in the preteen and the teen years, what kids really need is to be heard. They want someone to really hear them and understand them and care about where they are. And maybe that conversation will get to how we can help that person get out of the situation. But what comes first is just a ton of empathy and listening, really listening to this person to so that they feel seen and understood. And if every young person had that one person, that would be so amazing and spark change right there. So we all have an opportunity to be that person for somebody. And just by starting with those two things, let's start with empathy and let's start with, deep listening to this person so they know that we are a person that they can come to when things get hard.
Yes, and do you say deep listening? So as a parent, it's so tempting, and maybe even an educator, you're bigger, you're older, to tell the child what to do or just to listen, just to let them express themselves. And a child might also find journaling or some kind of arts where they can express themselves also helpful. I'm listening to you. We're here on Off the Shelf interviewing Jessica Speer, and we're talking about one of her books, BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships, which I think a lot of what she shared could also help boys. But I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, this could help adults too. I'm listening to what you're sharing, somebody, a safe place, empathy, somebody to fully listen to you, even throughout our entire physical experience. These are things that we could find helpful for us. Now, I wanted to ask you, for our listeners, guess what is the friendship pyramid? Never heard of that term before.
Yeah, so this is something that's in my first book, the BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends book, and this provides a framework for kids, but also, families and schools. So it helps get a quick illustration out there, and I'll explain it for everybody so they can understand the friendship pyramid. So imagine a triangle, and then the very tippy top is a shaded part that I call close friends, and it's very small, because we know as adults that it could be hard to find, these people that are our safe spaces, like we just talked about. These are the people that we feel like we can really share with. We can really, take a deep breath and relax with because they're not going to, judge us. They're not going to make us feel bad about ourselves. So they're hard to come by. So I let kids know they're out there, though. They're out there. And so keep looking for them. We may go through times in our life we don't have that person, but it's important for all of us to keep an eye out for those close friends, those people that we feel really emotionally safe with. We can really share, deeper parts of ourselves. The largest part of the pyramid, so a big swath across the middle, I call friends, and I have that in quotes, and these are really important relationships too, but they don't feel like those close friends. They're our neighbors, and they're our teammates, and they're classmates, and they're friends too, and they're very imperfect relationships. Sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not great at all, but it's super important for kids and adults to have lots of people in that bucket. These are our day-to-day interactions, the people that, we know on a friend level. So you know, there's a lot of people there, and some of those people might turn into close friends someday. And then the base of the pyramid is acquaintances. And there's tons of people out there that are not yet friends, but people we know or we might see around town that could grow into friends. So I like to point that out to kids and teens that there's a lot of people out there that they will meet later that, who knows, could be friends. And then running up and down the side of the pyramid is change. And this is what we talked about earlier, one of those friendship truths, that sometimes we might have a friend that grows more into an acquaintance. We might have an acquaintance that we really hit it off with, and it changes all the way into a close friend. So helping kids know that these changes and transitions and friendships are totally normal. You know, it's just how our relationships work over time.
I'm listening to you. I'm like, I think I'm going to go get this book for myself.
This book
is kids, adults. I'm listening to what you're sharing. It's like beyond a certain age, a lot of what you're sharing to me. And it is true. Tons of acquaintances, then your neighbors and people you regularly see and colleagues, and then close friends. And fortunately, I'm blessed myself with close friends and close family relationships. I now, that friendship pyramid or that relationship pyramid is very important. Now, this next question I'm going to ask you could impact the book we just were speaking about, BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendship, but could also have impact with middle school safety goggles advice, which we're going to talk about shortly, and the phone book. And then the next question is, I was driving home and I heard this report, and I also looked online, a recent report shared that kids spend an average of 2 hours a week outside. I certainly hope that has changed. And I found that absolutely shocking because me and my siblings spent hours a day playing outside and our friends. Why do you think, first of all, is that true from your observation? And why do you think kids are staying indoors more? And how does this affect their relation building, their social skills?
That's such a great question. And you know, truly, you know, childhood and life as a teen has shifted a lot with the introduction of technology. So let me give you a couple of stats that might totally blow your mind. So if we think of kids, and a lot of kids are in school 7 to 8 hours a day. Well, on top of that, preteens, so young, I would say preteens is 9 to 12, they're spending after school an additional 5 hours on devices, and that's actually outside homework tests. This is looking at YouTube and playing games and, you know, maybe texting friends. And for teens, it's on average eight hours a day after school. So your kids' lives have moved in line. Yeah, they've moved inside because they are on devices. And now, not all of that's bad. Some are, you know, creating amazing movements online and doing creative things, and, you know, they're connecting with friends. And in some ways, they're doing things that we did as kids. So they're listening to music, they're playing the game, they're playing games, they're chatting with friends. You know, but there's also things that we, you know, definitely were not doing. Like, we didn't have social media, and we didn't, you know, spend probably so much time watching entertaining videos as kids are these days. YouTube is the most popular site for preteens and teens. So you know, childhood and life as a teen has certainly shifted. So it does not surprise me at all that they're only spending a little bit of time outdoors.
Wow. That is amazing. That is just, I just couldn't imagine. I had so much fun playing outside. We had so much fun playing outside. Now, Dr. Cheryl Lee Hirsch, a school psychologist, is reported as saying this about the book. And again, the title of the book is BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships by Jessica Speer, S-P-E-E-R. So Dr. Shirley Hurst, a school psychologist, the reporter saying this. She said, many girls struggle with friendship issues in elementary and middle school, which I didn't even know. This book provides a clear roadmap for girls to successfully navigate difficult friendships while helping them gain social awareness, skills, and confidence in the process. Are there specific childhood events? I still have struggled with kids having a hard time making friends. I don't know why I'm having a hard time accepting that. Are there specific childhood events, family patterns, that make it hard for girls to make friends? I'm having a hard time thinking that they do have a hard time making friends.
Yeah, you know, and I think what, you know, when we, you know, they might have friends that we talked about, like in the middle of the pyramid, where they're just, you know, casual acquaintances. But I think because kids are not one-on-one as much anymore, in fact, kids are spending a lot less time, you know, physically in person together. And there's wonderful connections that happen when we're actually with another person. You know, we get to see their facial expressions. We get to hear their tone of voice. That's actually happening a lot less, believe it or not. There's a lot more of these interactions are online. And so a lot more kids are actually, even though they're more connected than they're ever, they're reporting loneliness. And it's that really in-person, face-to-face connection. So what I do encourage parents is, if possible, you get kids engaged in something that requires them to, you know, physically be with other young people, you know, whether it's a team or it's a club or it's volunteering or, you know, something that gets them out of their bedroom and you actually hanging out in person with other kids, because that's the start of developing, you know, closer, more supportive friendships rather than online friendships.
Okay. Now, congratulations, Jessica, on the book winning and or being nominated for several awards, including Kids Book Choice Awards, Royal Dragonfly Book Award, and the Best Books of 2021. Oh, my goodness. What was it like when you found out you were nominated?
Ah, you know, it felt so good, because this book, you know, and you probably experience this too, Denise, you know, sometimes you write and you rewrite the book so many times because you just want to get it as good as you can get. So this book, I rewrote probably 12 times. So it just felt great. I'm like, okay, good. You know, I think I got something right there. You know, we as writers are always doubting ourselves, but you're just to know that the time and effort I put into just carefully putting that book together, you know, it worked. It's landing really well with kids and families.
Now introduce us to middle school safety goggles before we talk about phone book. Introduce us to middle school safety goggles advice. What is this book about?
My first book came out, and I was still, there were a lot of things I really wanted to explore about, you know, preteens and this phase of life. And so I started, actually, I was in middle schools at this point, and more on a research level. I was trying to understand, you know, what is it like to be in middle school today? So I met with a lot of students and talked to them. You know, what are some of the trickier parts of middle school? Like, because middle school can sometimes be a real challenging time for kids. You know, there's a lot going on with them developmentally. You know, their bodies are changing. Their brains are changing at huge rates. There's a lot of changes in their social world. And so, you know, when we have a period of life where there's massive amounts of change, it's not surprising. It can be a tricky time. So I wanted to write a book to help. So I talked to students about, you know, what are some of the trickier things about middle school, and culled that list down to the top 10 things, the trickiest parts of middle school, and wrote a book about that, again with stories. So this book has choose your own ending stories. I don't know if you remember these when you were growing up, Denise, but so you start the story, and then at the beginning of the story, it gives you a choice. You know, would you do this, or would you do that, or would you do that? So I took some common middle school stories that I was hearing and turned them into choose your own ending stories so that kids could, you know, get a feel for what might they do in that situation. So to give you an example, one of the issues I heard a lot, that one of the hardest parts of middle school is gossip. You know, gossip is rampant, and sometimes it's untrue, and it's about you. So the choose your own ending story is about, you know, a person that, you know, there's gossip spreading around them. You know, what might you do? And just walking through some options there just to equip kids with, like, well, what might I do in this situation? How might I handle that situation? And it also makes it fun. It's more fun to read in that way than, you know, a story that is a tricky topic. It's a difficult topic to read about, because nobody loves to be the person, you know, that has a bunch of gossip spreading about them.
Now, what are two things that parents can do to help prepare their kids for middle school as they're coming out of elementary? Because it's very different.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a time of life where their confidence dips. Confidence dips especially for girls, and a lot of that might have to be due with the changes in their body. So maybe they're not, you know, as confident in themselves. You know, but if we can and keep encouraging our kids, you know, to share their light and be confident, that confidence supports kids through school. And I certainly noticed that the kids that were the most confident were sailing through middle school, you know, in the easiest way. So and it's hard to impact confidence, but, you know, just if kids know that at home that they are worthy and they are great as they are and they are accepted as they are, that's going to help build their confidence. So you know, that's one thing that I encourage. But also getting back to supporting them by just being there to listen and you know, being the person they could talk to when they have a really bad day at school.
And I find I ran track and cross country, and my father told us we weren't going to just go to school. We had to be involved in an extracurricular activity as well. And we all did sports, and I was in, I don't even know if they still have 4-H, but we all did different things in school, clubs, whatever, et cetera. I think getting your kids involved, like you said, it may not be in a school system. It may be something else they're involved in. Could be arts, could be where they have to work with other kids their age in a safe environment, and maybe other adults, but definitely in a safe environment. You definitely want to know the adults are safe for sure. But that goes a long way for confidence, particularly the sport. Maybe the child gets better at it, or they just love the sport, or something your child is good at, but they're not doing it by themselves all the time. I think that is theater. I don't even know if they still have that in school. They used to have more arts programs. They used to have chorus and theater and different things you could get involved with. I think that helps build relationships and help with confidence. I think that's another great way. Now, how did you get so many students to contribute to Middle School Safety Goggles Advised?
You know, it was wonderful. I worked with a school specifically, and you know, just I was just there and was able to meet with small groups over the course of a year, and I just kept popping back in. So it allowed me to get to know the kids, and they started to feel, you know, safe and comfortable sharing with me. And in fact, they actually enjoyed talking about it, like, oh, somebody actually wants to hear about this. But one of the best ways I found to get ideas from them is I just give them a small slip of paper and have them write. I'd be like, okay, tell me, you know, the question is, you know, what are some of the trickiest parts? But then also, what advice would you give? You know, now that you've been here and you've been through middle school, what advice would you give to a middle schooler? So those pieces of advice from middle schoolers are peppered throughout that book. So that book is filled, again, you know, with the voices of preteens because, you know, they're the ones living and experiencing that. So I wanted to make sure I include as many of those voices as possible.
That adds so much value to your book. It's not just from research, not just from a study. You actually spoke to kids and got direct feedback from them that you might not find in that any form, that specific form in any other book other than Middle School Safety Goggles Advice. For our off-the-shelf listeners, how many middle schoolers would you say did provide some feedback or input to what's in the book?
I spoke to well over 100. Yeah, well over 100. And you know, what I found was in middle school, I wasn't finding huge differences in what they were saying by gender. You know, the girls were saying this, the boys. So in that book, I don't even, you know, attribute some of these quotes from students to a gender. You know, I do keep them private. I don't, they're shared anonymously, and I don't put anybody's name. But I, after reading all those quotes, I wasn't seeing enough of a difference. So I'm like, you know what, I'm not even going to say whether a boy or girl said this because it doesn't matter. You know, it just doesn't matter. So that book is really gender neutral because I was finding a lot of the experiences were happening, you know, to both boys and girls.
Interesting. Now, what have readers been saying about Middle School Safety Goggles Advised? And when you answer, if you can answer what middle schoolers are saying about it versus what parents and educators, other adults are saying about it.
You know, for middle schoolers, I'm pleased to know. I think they do enjoy that choose your own ending approach. You know, that's it's just a different way to read a choose your own ending story, and it's a fun way to read through difficult topics. So I think that landed really well with the audience. For parents, they're just happy to have a resource, especially if they've got a kid who's struggling. You know, it's important to have a resource to put in their hands to help them know that they're not alone and there are some tools and things they can do to make change.
Mm, awesome. Now we're getting to the new book, What has it been like researching and writing your new book, Phone Book?
Oh, that was a fascinating one. And I actually started researching the phone book and writing it during the pandemic when we were all getting sucked into our screens. So I started to come across some of those statistics I shared earlier about just how much time kids are spending online. And I saw this documentary. It's called The Social Dilemma. And in that documentary, they interview a lot of executives at the top tech companies. And so it was super eye-opening for me to learn kind of behind the curtain how these technologies work and where we are as far as safety and protocols for kids. And that inspired me to write something, because what became clear to me when I started to look into this is we are not yet at a place with, you know, technology and kids that there's a lot of guardrails in place. You know, I almost look at it like, so cars were invented in the 1800s, and it took almost 100 years to get seatbelts in those cars. It just, you know, takes time for new inventions like that. It takes time to really make them as safe as we can. And now we've got backup cameras and sensors and seatbelts. And, you know, so for phones, you know, they're still fairly new. And there's a lot of discussion about how to make these tools safer for kids, but they're going through at a snail's pace. So I wanted to write something direct to kids just to make them aware of things that we want to make sure kids are aware of. So the first chapter of that book is called, you know, Why Tech Companies Want You Staring at Your Screen. And it talks about the tech business model, which is actually advertising and data collection.
Yes,
so
yes,
it's important.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's important. It's just important for them to know that, you know, so these businesses there's an incentive to keep you staring at your screen because it's profit related. You know, and I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that's just what it is. So it's important for you to know as a consumer that that's how the system works. You know, so they need your eyes on your screen. And here's some of the things that you know, tech companies do to keep you there. And so I talk about some persuasive design strategies. So if you're into cell phones, you know, you'll know about notifications and tagging and reminders and, you know, tokens and game levels. And so there's all these things that phones so beautifully do that keep us going back to them. And again, I'm not saying tech is bad. I actually love technology, but I think we need just to be as informed consumers as we can be so that we can also enjoy all the other things in life. So I wanted kids to just have a better understanding of that. So that's just chapter one, and then it goes into all sorts of other, you know, safe and healthy topics so they can really use that technology as a force for good.
Okay. Now, are you hoping, what would be your hope as the author a phone book to see kids maybe, now I work with colleagues, they limit the amount of time their kids can be on social media and to watching television. Their kids are involved in sports, they're involved in different programs, and they do not let their kids, you're not going to be on in front of the TV for hours of social media. My dad limited for us, get outside, get out of here, you're not watching TV for all day, go. And so we couldn't. Now, are you hoping to reduce the time kids spend on tech devices? Like you said, this is a whole big world. There's so much more to do. Are you hoping to do that so these kids can grow up and get more broader, deeper experiences?
I would love that. Yeah, and I do. I always say to parents, and I love what you said, you know, if you can encourage your kids to get involved in other activities they love, you know, and then, you know, their phone and their device is there too, but they have lots of other things in their life that they're excited about and they enjoy. Love that, you know, and then so they're spending less time in their screens. You know, my hope really was to help kids develop healthy digital habits and stay safe. You know, I've got a whole chapter on stranger danger too, because I hate to say, but there's a lot of people online that are taking advantage of kids in really inappropriate ways. So I, you know, I go into that too. The hope is to help kids stay safe and healthy. And in my perfect world, I would love for, you know, parents or caregivers to read it as well before they give a child their first connected device. So they kind of talk through all these topics that we want our kids to know before we just hand over either the phone or the iPad as a digital device that's connected to the Internet.
You know, I know people. I knew a woman I interviewed years ago on Off the Shelf. She said her and her family, they don't They do not watch television. Now, once a year, they work on the land. Once a year, they do will watch a movie together as a family and enjoy it. She said it changed their lives. Their relationships are deeper. They have more connectivity. I'm telling you, people who pull away from these television, and they tell me it changes their life. I'm telling you, they say they feel different. They just feel better. Now, can you tell us about the Zombieland chapter? What do you focus on in this chapter?
So that actually goes into tech addiction, which is a thing. So it is possible, you know, to get addicted to your screen and devices. So I talk about that. I talk about, you know, there's a story, and it's a true story in that chapter about a girl who got so addicted to her screen that everything else dropped. Her grades dropped and her friendships dropped. And she had a lot of conflict with her family, and they had to actually get some support, you know, some counseling and some family support to work through that. So luckily, you know, addiction is not as common. You know, people are on their phones a lot, but not as many kids are truly addicted to their screens. However, I did find many teens describe themselves as addicted, like they use that word, but it's not a full-blown addiction where it's impacting, you know, all these other areas of their lives. So I just talk about that because, you know, people might not realize that that is actually a real thing. It is possible to be addicted to technology in our phones in a way that other parts of our lives really start to fall apart.
Now, why do you refer to social media as Disneyland?
Yes, so there is a big chapter on social media because that is a huge part of, you know, teen life these days and how many teens are connecting and expressing themselves. But like we started our conversation, you know, sometimes what we're seeing is just the curated very best of people's lives. You know, we're not seeing the socks on the floor and the bad days and the struggles. You know, sometimes we're just seeing the very best parts. And so, you know, if we are comparing, it's hard to compare ourselves to just the very best, you know, filtered parts of people's lives. So that chapter talks about that, just to be aware that social media, yes, is a way to be creative and connect, but it is showing both lives. You know, everybody has challenges. Nobody's perfect. Nobody actually looks like they do in a lot of those pictures. You know, so just helping kids navigate that too, because kids can fall into the trap of comparing themselves to what they're seeing online.
Now, when did it come out? It's your new book. When was it actually released, and what have people been saying about phone books?
So the phone book just came out last August, so August 2023, and I've been thrilled with the feedback because, like I said, I think we're at a point where kids are getting devices earlier and earlier, and parents are a little perplexed with how to prepare for that. So I've been getting great feedback that, you know, this is a book that fills that need to help families prepare, you know, their kids for this phone or this connected device. So I've been really excited with how that book is doing. It's actually up for a couple awards already too. So I'm really excited about that. It's been a thrill, and I'm just so happy to have it out there. And like my other books, of course, it's filled with, you know, fun facts and activities and stories, because to get young people to read books like this, it has to be as fun as possible. So it's filled with really positive stories, too, about technology and how technology is changing the world in really positive ways.
You do great work, the stuff that you write. It sounds fun, and it can help not only children but adults as well, parents, educators, or just adults, the topics that you cover in your books as well. Now, you also blog. How has blogging, Jessica, helped you to connect with new readers?
Oh, you know, it's funny. In my blog, I mostly am connecting with parents. So, you know, my books I'm writing right for kids. My blog is read by parents and caregivers and counselors, and I talk a lot about, you know, just raising kids in these connected, supportive households that we like to have. You know, so we talked about that safe space earlier. So a lot of my blogs talk about that. Or I share some of the research and what I heard when talking to students and researching my book, because I found, you know, adults like to hear that. They like to hear, what are these students telling me? You know, what is life like on the ground today in middle school or as a teen? So I do share what I'm learning, you know, about kids in my research, because, you know, parents parents like to be as informed as possible on, you know, preteen and teen life today so they can parent accordingly.
Now, please share, as we come down to about 5 minutes or less in today's show, please share 3 to 4 steps that you have taken personally and you found to be effective at getting the word out about your books.
So I love talking to people like you, Denise. So I feel like, you know, it's just so fun to talk with other authors about their passion. So for me, I do a lot of interviews and podcasts. So that's been helpful to get the word out about my books. So has writing articles, and I write articles just on my blog, but for other platforms too. So I write a lot about this topic. So that's been helpful for my books. And let's see, what else? Visiting schools. I love to visit schools and present to kids, but I also present to parents too. So those would be my top ways that I've found help bring some visibility to my books.
How did you, were you able to get into schools? Did you just reach out to schools directly? Was that how your gateway into being able to speak at schools?
In my community, you know, most of the schools know me, but I also have a booking agent. So I have an agent that books me for school visits, which is helpful. So when I'm not in Colorado, this booking agent can help me, you know, get connected with other schools. If somebody's inquiring, usually it starts with an inquiry from a school because they're interested in exploring this topic at their school.
Okay. Now, are you working on any other new books? Phone book came out last August. Are you working? I know you did say you were. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book you're working on and when we can expect to see it on the market?
Oh, yeah, and it always takes a long time, but I'm working on, like I said, another friendship book, this one not just for girls, and I don't know yet, I'm not done, and then my books are also all illustrated, so they have fun comic-like illustrations, and so once I get, you know, once I get it done, and it gets to the editor, and the illustrator gets assigned, and, you know, it goes through several stages of editing, it'll be a couple years, but it'll take a while, but it'll get there, yeah, it'll get there, and hopefully it'll be a good book.
Okay, now, can you tell our off-the-shelf listeners where they can get copies of your books and the formats that your books are available in?
They are available anywhere books are sold. So, you know, Target and Barnes & Noble and Amazon. They are both ebook and print, but I do always love the print because they are activity-based books, so it's nice to actually have the print version. You know, if kids wanted to, they could actually write some things in these books. So, anywhere books are sold.
Okay. Now, we learned so much about ourselves, Jessica. We're coming down to the last about 2 minutes. We learn so much about ourselves while creating. What have you learned about yourself so far since you started writing your first book?
Oh, what have I learned? I've learned so much, but I have learned, I think, to be a better listener, you know, because I do a lot of listening in my research, and I've learned that, you know, change is the norm, you know, changes in ourselves, changes in the world, changes in, you know, people, that change is the norm. So to really be open to that change in, you know, ourselves and others.
I think that's so important. That's a stress reliever right there. You just got to, whatever, I don't care how good it is or how bad, which is some things aren't the way you want them, that's good news. It's not going to stay that way. Everything in this world does change. Now, we're talking about social media. If you're on any social networks, particularly for adults, parents, tell us what some of the social networks that people can find you on if you are on them.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, and just search for Spear. I think I always forget my handles. I think it's Jessica Spear Author on Instagram and LinkedIn. If you search Jessica Spear Author on LinkedIn, I'm there as well.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful, wonderful treat. We have had the absolute pleasure. If you came in midstream or near the end, no worries, no worries. Once the show finishes streaming, you can go back, listen to it in the archives as many times as you like. You can share it with your friends, educators, neighbors, people who work with kids. Just share the show once it finishes streaming in its entirety. You'll find it in the archives here at Off the Shelf Books. Oh, my goodness, I just want to thank Jessica here. She's the author of BFF or NRF, Not Really Friends, A Girl's Guide to Happy Friendships, Middle School Safety Goggles Advice, and her latest book, The Phone Book. Please visit Jessica Speer online at Jessica Speer, JessicaSpeer.com. Again, JessicaSpeer.com. Thank you so much, Jessica, for being here with us on Off the Shelf. You're an absolute treat. And thank you to all of our listeners that listen for the first time, our loyal listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Please set your calendar. Just mark your calendar. You're going to catch Off the Shelf books Saturday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you can learn about more fabulous books. We have movie producers on here, songwriters, actresses on, and authors. You just don't want to miss Off the Shelf Books, Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as I always tell you, you are amazing. You really, really are. You are incredible. You are phenomenal. Go out and create a fabulous day for yourself today. Jessica, I'll email you a link to the show when it finishes streaming. Thank you so much. Bye for now.